You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
GM Ryan, how you doing today?
Doing well. How are you, Logan?
Personally, I'm rocking with the bedhead look right now. The crypto markets have not gotten me out of bed yet. So until they do, I'm going to have to stick with this look. But how are you feeling about the markets right now?
You know, I'm not really disturbed by it. We've been through it time and time again, up only eventually. So I'm not scared.
That's what I like to hear. I want to know what you guys think out there in the chat. All six of our current viewers, drop a comment right below that like button, which hopefully you'll smash while you're down there. How are you feeling about the markets? What you got your eyes on? I have the live chat on the screen right now. We're going to have it for the first half of the show before the interview. So, get your comment up there. And what are we going to be doing on today's show, Ryan?
Oh, we got a ton of stuff planned, Logan. I'm glad you asked. We'll be looking at the crypto markets, doing some technical analysis, hopefully get some trade ideas thrown around. And then we'll be looking at the NFT markets as well as some NFT drama. And then finally, we have an interview with Michael Gord. This guy, super cool. He's the CEO and co-founder of Tokens.com, GDA Capital, and he's investing heavily in the metaverse. So we're going to be talking metaverse real estate with Michael Gord. Stay tuned for that. That's happening at about 2:30 p.m.
Super exciting. I'm really excited to look at NFTs. It's been a while. We've been too focused on those darn BTC and ETH charts, but it's going to be a fun day to look at some NFTs. If you're just tuning in, make sure to smash the like button. Let us know you're here and drop a comment with your trade ideas in the chat below. Good day to Adam, Point of Blue, Martin, and Mike. What's up, guys? Hope you're doing well. So let's get into the charts. I'm going to throw Bitcoin on the screen. Here we got the weekly candles. So last night we closed a weekly candle at about $50,000, just above that 50K point. I think that was pretty critical to hold. Since then, we've had a little bit of a sell-off. We're at 47.2 right now. Ryan, what do you think this week is going to look like for the markets?
Logan, I have no idea. I don't have a crystal ball, so I cannot tell you, but I can tell you a key point to look at is that lower low that we had back, or that higher low actually that we had maybe a month and a half ago. Back there. I think as long as we can hold above that, we'll still technically be in an uptrend if we can hold a higher low from there. And then hopefully we can just slowly go up, consolidate and get back to that 50 to 60K range by the end of the month. That being said, if we don't hold that, then we're kind of moving sideways and we could even be in a downtrend. So that's a key point I'm looking at right now. I can't really even see the price there, Logan. Is that like $41,000 that we hit back in maybe the end of September that we should be hopefully holding if we want to remain bullish through the end of the year?
This line right here, the bottom of the wick is at 39.7. And the close was at $43,000. So yeah, I think we could definitely stay. We need to stay above this line. And if we want to go, up again, if in any meaningful way, I think we're going to need to hold 53. The on-chain analysts have been calling out that number, so I'm just going to roll with that for the time being.
Did you see what their reasoning was for $53,000 being that key point to watch for?
Yeah, I can't give you anything too good, but maybe we can look into it in a little bit here. In the meantime, ETH has been doing about the same. Here we have the weekly candles. Third red one in a row that is open right now. You know, a little bit of a correction on that ETH BTC pair, but it is staying above that, the top of that triangle that we broke out of. So I'm staying optimistic. I think we could see ETH lead the second half of this bull run. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we definitely could. With all the ETH being locked up in DeFi and NFTs and ETH 2.0, it certainly could lead the rest of the bull run. It held up so well against Bitcoin. I was surprised when Bitcoin crashed down to $40,000. Ethereum was still trading, you know, $3,900, $3,800. So it held up super well, which hopefully is telling of where it's going in the future. But since then, you know, we've corrected some. But like you said, Logan, we're above that triangle. Hopefully we find some support there and keep heading up. My price target for ETH in comparison to Bitcoin is at least 0.1, and we're not there yet. So it'll be interesting to see if we can get up to that 0.1 ETH per Bitcoin, or no, other way around, 0.1 Bitcoin per ETH. That'd be a big mark to hit. And then, you know, up only from there. And then the flippening happens. We're all happy.
I think you had it right the first time. 0.1 Bitcoin per ETH would mean that ETH is 10x the price of Bitcoin. So 0.1 ETH per Bitcoin is what we're looking at here. But either way, Ryan, I think 0.1 is a great target. I mean, we saw that we hit it back in 2017 and 2018, and we even went a little bit higher. So if we were to get a new all-time high on the ETH BTC pair, I think that would mean the flippening is imminent. You know, we've been looking at this, you know, reversal, this chart here for years now. People have been saying, what happens if ETH BTC breaks out? Is it possible? Now it's happened, and everybody's kind of quiet, but we'll keep our eyes on it. Dante mentioned it as well. He has been keeping an eye on this, and he wants to know, Ryan, any idea on when ETH 2.0 will launch?
You know, it could be in a few months, it could be in a few years. It's really hard to tell. I'm really hoping that it comes out, you know, between March to July of next year. But like I said, it's really hard to tell. There's no set release date. But from what I've heard the developers say, they're shooting for around quarter two of next year.
That would certainly, great, right? Yeah, no, that would be amazing if we can see ETH scale by that time. It would really, really be bullish for the space in general. And we've seen Vitalik issue some updates to the ETH 2.0 roadmap. Maybe we have time to get into these today, or maybe it's a better topic for Friday, but they are shifting from sharding into a layer 2 centric ecosystem. So Polygon, Arbitrum, Optimism, and you know, the promises of ZK technology are what the Ethereum community is focusing on at this point. So I think Arbitrum is removing its whitelist, opening the floodgates to full volume very soon here. Polygon should be doing it by next year. And
we'll Logan, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What do you think happens first, Ethereum 2.0 or the flippening?
Huh. That's a good question. I'm going to think about it for a second, but drop your thoughts in the chat below. What happens first, ETH 2 or the flippening? I think that we'll probably continue to gain on the ETH BTC pair. I'm not sure if ETH 2.0 is required for the flippening, but I think ETH 2.0 will cause the flippening if it hasn't happened already. Dante thinks 2.0 will need to come first.
I agree, Dante. I think ETH 2.0 has to come first. But Logan, like you said, I think ETH 2.0 could certainly be the catalyst that makes Ethereum flip Bitcoin.
And Chad's talking about the Pulse chain will be out in a couple weeks, a fork of ETH. I believe this is like the, what's it called? Hex. This is like the Hex project. I don't know. Chad, drop some more info for us in the chat. Maybe we can look into it. But yeah, Mike wants to know, or Martin, excuse me, Ether price should hold where? Where do you think, Ryan?
I think we could see it hold kind of close to the prices we're at right now, between $3,800 to $4,200. Like I've said before, I think we're probably going to hold relatively flat through December. You know, earlier on in November, I was pretty bullish for the rest of the year, calling for maybe a $70,000 to $80,000 Bitcoin. But now that we've had a significant correction, I think we'll probably be holding. It's going to take us a little while to get back on our feet, but hopefully we'll hold around these current prices. I don't see us breaking down too much farther. But like I said earlier in the episode, there's that key level to watch. Make sure we're holding a higher low than before. For Ethereum, it's a little bit different than Bitcoin, a little bit farther down. But that weekly close is right around $3,100.
Yep.
So, I mean, that could be a level of support. If we break down below that, things will not be looking good. I might have to apply to McDonald's if that happens. It's not going to be pretty.
You haven't applied yet?
I have not. I mean, we're still holding at a $4,000 ETH. That's not bad.
Maybe we could work at like the same branch of McDonald's. That might be fun.
I'd be hype. We could take it over. Start accepting crypto.
Can we get Ronald McDonald on the next episode of Moon or Bust?
Yeah, I'll queue it up. I'll DM him on Twitter.
The McRib NFT launch. Oh boy. Anyways, let's take a look at some NFTs. So let's start it off. Mutant Apes, you and me, we both have one, Ryan. How are you feeling about our investment at this point?
You know, we saw that run up last month, Logan, and it went up so fast from like 3.5 ETH all the way up to over 7 ETH. And the volume was just insane. So I was feeling really good. And really, we've held it relatively well. I'm still bullish and I'll be holding over at least the midterm. I want to see this ape game come out. I want to see the banana token come out. I want to see Coinbase NFT release their platform. Once all those things happen, then I'll start considering, you know, when is the time to sell? I don't think the time to sell is going to be this month, next month, you know, maybe in the spring, maybe in the summer, but I definitely want to get at least double digit Ethereum for my mutant ape. I will definitely not be letting it go under 10, but I'm really hoping to get at least 15 for it. And I think with all these catalysts coming up, especially the Coinbase NFT platform and that ape game, those two will be really big. And I think the prices could double within that time.
Ryan, you mentioned the ape game. We brought it up one time on the show before, but they announced a new partnership with Animoca Brands, who I know you are familiar with. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so Animoca Brands was co-founded by Yatsu, which I actually interviewed for CoinGeckoCon's conference. This guy's absolutely insane. He started a ton of different projects. He was in the iOS App Store super early, and then he transitioned to blockchain gaming. And since then, he's funded Decentraland, Axie Infinity, MetaMask, and probably close to 100 other projects. This guy is absolutely crazy, really deep in the blockchain space. And now they're helping Bored Ape Yacht Club make their mobile game. So I'm really excited to see this. They have a huge portfolio and a ton of connections within the space. So, I mean, this is great to see. I think Bored Ape Yacht Club is taking this game super seriously, and it should be fun to play. And hopefully the incentives are aligned for Bored Ape Yacht Club holders to be able to make some money playing the game as well.
Very cool. Yeah, I know that Animoca Brands is very serious about what they do. And I honestly did not expect the partnership with Bored Ape Yacht Club to come out. But, you know, following the partnership with Adidas, Bored Ape Yacht Club is taking their stuff seriously. So I guess I can't say I'm too surprised in retrospect. But here we can see the volume on the Mutant Apes just flipping back to this. Like Ryan said, it spiked in the beginning of November. We saw a little bit of an uptick just a couple days ago. Hopefully we can see the volume break out again. But nothing is really comparing to that first day. Probably a huge sell-off there and some huge buying,
Logan,
as well. What's up?
I have an inquiry here on these Mutant Apes right before we go to the Bored Apes, because I know the Bored Ape Yacht Club, the four tray apes, I don't know if you've kept up on them, but they're getting super expensive. The cheapest ones are like 280 Ethereum now. I'm wondering if you can filter by the traits on Mutant Ape Yacht Club as well and see if the same trend is happening.
Sure thing. Trait count. Let's see how many.
Four.
Trait count four. So, okay, so there are 445 mutants out of the 20,000 with only four traits. And if we sort them by price low to high, we could see the floor on them is around 7.25 ETH right now. I don't think they look necessarily as cool as...
Yeah,
as
I agree. Bored apes. So that's kind of what I was thinking, Logan. You know, the four trait apes are really clean. The mutant apes are a little bit more involved. The art is kind of, you know, more involved. So it makes sense that Bored Ape Yacht Club's four traits are going up, while these are kind of, you know, people don't really care about them as much as far as the trait count goes.
Mm-hmm. But besides the only the one, this is the rarest trait count. So that is something to keep our eyes on. Could be, you know, more valuable or more desired in the future. Cool to point that out. Your pal Al says, I am an older investor, and to be honest, I don't understand a thing you're saying. That's totally fine. We'd like to welcome you to the rabbit hole that is crypto and NFTs. If you have any specific questions, feel free to drop them in the chat and we'll do our best to get to them. Our goal with this show is just to bring crypto, NFTs, all this knowledge to as many people as possible. So I appreciate you for coming in and joining us today. And hopefully we can answer some of your questions as we go. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you smash the like button. We got 126 viewers right now. So let's see if we can get one like. Can we get one like on today's stream? Everybody go give one like. All right, back to the apes. You want to look at the Bored Apes now, Ryan?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so we saw a floor sweep just last week, taking the floor from 50 to 53 within a couple minutes, okay? The activity was crazy. I think that you could see it right there. And let's see, if this is the last 90 days, if we go to all time, just crazy, crazy numbers. And this breakout is looking pretty bullish. I'm not really feeling this big correction here because it went lower than this. But, you know, the NFT market is still in its early infancy, so the charts are not as liquid as the charts we're used to looking at. It's kind of hard to make the same takeaways. Would you agree with that, Ryan?
Yeah, and I don't think many people are really looking at the charts when it comes to NFTs either. It's much more about the collection, the different traits, and you know, there's so many other factors that go into it. Logan, did you see that one guy who minted a Bored Ape Yacht Club at mint for 0.0 ETH or 0.08 ETH? So yeah, like $250, right? He sold it this week. He sold his ape. It was a rare one. It had laser eyes and a couple other pretty cool traits. He got $1.4 million for it.
Absolutely nuts. That dude is certainly going to make it. What do you think about his decision to sell at this point? Obviously he started with a very small budget, so taking profits is very respectable. And maybe if that was, 99.99% of his portfolio, it totally makes sense. I don't really know if we can make any takeaways from that. What do you think?
Yeah, not really. I mean, props to him for holding so long, right? It was a $250 investment and he netted $1.4 million on it. That's absolutely insane. So props to him for holding this long, but I don't blame him for selling whatsoever. That's a life-changing amount of money, $1.4 million. And he could easily get into another ape around the floor for maybe $250,000 to $300,000 and still be exposed to Bored Ape Yacht Club. Maybe hold that one forever since he's made so much money now and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly a pretty good strategy. I think it was this one right here.
Yep,
yeah, last sale, 347 ETH. That is absurd. If we take a look at the events here, we see, oh boy, please scroll. Minted to John Knopf 7 months ago and sold to The Vault one day ago, 347 ETH. Goddamn. That's crazy.
A lot of Ethereum, especially when Ethereum hits $100,000. That's a lot of money.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So a couple of great questions. Martin wants to know about better to buy the Mana token or land in the metaverse. We're going to get into that really soon here. But we got an important primer question from Al. Okay. So he does not mean to be rude and we're not going to take it personally, but why would anyone want to buy an NFT? What can you do with it? That is a great question, right? So if we take a look at the Bored Ape Yacht Club, the project we're looking at right now, it's not just an NFT. It's not just a JPEG. Number one, it's a blockchain token that has provable ownership and proves the authenticity of the piece of art, but it's also membership to the club itself. So, yacht clubs, these high-end clubs like Soho House are nothing new. People are used to paying thousands and thousands of dollars in annual fees for membership to these exclusive clubs because they provide elite networking possibilities. And the Bored Ape Yacht Club is no exception, right? So the Bored Ape Yacht Club has a ton of money from the projects that they released, and they're using that money very effectively. They threw a party a couple months ago at NFT NYC that featured free shows from Lil Baby and the Strokes, completely open bar, and everyone there, you know, was an early crypto innovator or was a VC investor. This is where a lot of the space in the industry is taking shape at the Bored Ape Yacht Club events. And since that happened, we've seen a whole bunch of new celebrities ape in. I mean, we've got Jimmy Fallon, Post Malone, Von Miller, Lil Baby, Chainsmokers, Steph Curry, Adam Draper, Steve Aoki, Mark Cuban, Timbaland, Shaq, Marshmello, Logan Paul, Rich the Kid, Future. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We don't even have enough time to keep this list up to date on a day-to-day basis because it's growing so fast. So Ryan, you know, NFTs are just a picture, but a lot of them come with outside utility. So utility is what I think gives NFTs value. There's tons of different ways that projects can deliver value, but you know, it's access to the club is one of them. So yeah, I hope that clears up your question a little bit. Al, Ryan, do you have any other examples of NFT use cases or value propositions that you want to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, we're really at the tip of the iceberg, so it's hard to tell where NFTs will be at over the long term. But something else to know, I get why people get confused with NFTs, because a non-fungible token by itself doesn't have any value. And a lot of these NFTs will be valueless eventually because these clubs won't grow. But NFTs can be used for things like intellectual property rights or music streaming, as well as thousands of different things, metaverse land. So there's definitely different ways to make NFTs valuable. It's really just a way to authenticate something on the blockchain that isn't fungible, right? So like Bitcoin and Ethereum, each token's exactly the same, so they're fungible. So non-fungible tokens, just a way to verify something that is original on the blockchain. So I mean, that has limitless potential, and it's going to be really interesting to see where this all ends up over the next decade.
Most certainly, Ryan. And if you have any follow-up questions, feel free to drop them in the chat, but we are running out of time. So let's get on to the sandbox versus Decentraland debate. So I can drop this link in the chat with the celebrity NFTs if you want to take a look at it yourself. But let's just flip over to the sandbox. Okay, so there are two big metaverse tokens that everyone is paying attention to right now, the Sandbox and Decentraland. Ryan, I'm going to pull up my notes on the comparison between the two, but could you give us a quick overview of why someone might be interested in buying virtual land to begin with, and also maybe shout out the interview that's coming up?
Yeah, so guys, stay tuned. In 10 minutes, we have Michael Gord coming on. He recently acquired a 50% stake in Metaverse Properties. It's a digital real estate investment firm that's doing a ton of cool things in the metaverse. So I'm really excited for that. But these two different decentralized protocols here that are making metaverses are the Sandbox and Decentraland. Both very interesting projects, and they're both pretty similar. I'd say the Sandbox has more of a roadmap, and Decentraland's kind of self-governed, just letting the community do what they want with it. But people can buy land and then monetize it in a bunch of different ways in either of these virtual worlds. So Decentraland, its virtual reality world has been around a little bit longer than the Sandbox. The Sandbox actually just recently came out with the actual game. But people in Decentraland have made museums with NFTs. They've made in-game, like different types of games in the world where people can gamble. There's casinos, there's retail shops. So there's a bunch of different things people can do. And even companies like Adidas and Atari have bought land in these metaverses. So it's definitely interesting to see how this will all play out. You know, if more institutions will be buying land in these virtual worlds. And yeah, I think it's really exciting. Logan, do you have any notes on the differences between the Sandbox and Decentraland that you think are pretty notable?
I do, for sure. And one thing I want to point out before we really start getting into the nitty gritty is that casinos have hired real people to, you know, moderate their virtual casinos, right? And so there are new jobs that are being created in the metaverse, and some are so bullish as to say that, you know, 20 years down the road, there may be more jobs in the metaverse than in the real world. So, you know, obviously take that with a grain of salt. We're super, super early, but Decentraland and Sandbox are the two big names right now. So quick breakdown, Decentraland has 90,000 parcels of land, and the Sandbox has 166,000. So your floor price per parcel is actually higher for the Sandbox at this point in time. And maybe we'll see why that is. So both of these projects have tokens. In Decentraland, we have the Mana token, okay? And there was a question earlier, is it better to buy Mana token or metaverse land, the NFT itself. So if you have the budget, if you got the 3.6 ETH laying around, you might be better off buying an actual piece of land that you could try to flip in the future, but that's certainly more high risk. If you don't want to invest like $20,000, then you probably should just get a little bit of the token to speculate. But also these both of these projects have seen insane speculation and price runs after Facebook changed their name to Meta. So there is a lot of risk baked into that current price. Fair warning.
Al, wait for the interview. This is just the tip of the iceberg. There's they're renting out land, they're developing it, they're maintaining it. It's absolutely insane to see what this big money is doing in the metaverse already. And after we saw Facebook rebrand the Meta, right, everybody's looking at the metaverse. So it's going to be super interesting to see all these big companies come into the metaverse and enjoy some digital ownership.
All right, so tokens in Decentraland. There's Mana, the native currency, Wear, which are like a category of NFTs for wearables and articles. And then there's Land, which are the virtual plots of land. And then in the sandbox, on the other hand, we have four tokens: Sand, the native currency. We have Assets, which are like the clothes or whatever, Games, and then also Land, which are the actual land elements themselves. So I haven't seen too much about those like wearables, assets, and games yet. Right now, the native currencies and the NFTs that represent the land, I think, are the big things that people are looking at. But as far as roadmap goes, the sandbox has the goal of bringing their game to mobile devices by the end of 2022. Also launching on Xbox and PlayStation. And they want to have 5,000 games on the platform available. So kind of like a Roblox type beat. You have this open platform. You can develop mini games within it. Whereas on the other hand, Decentraland, they don't really have a roadmap per se, but they have been making big partnerships. They're looking to bring creators, brands, celebs into the space. And what's exciting as well is that Decentraland is interoperable with at least four other metaverse worlds. I don't ask me for more details on that because I can't tell you off the top of my head.
Logan, do you remember that cigar we saw for sale in Decentraland that was like 50 grand?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of a cool example of an NFT that was built in Decentraland. I was so confused. Why would anybody pay 50K for a cigar to put in your mouth at this casino? But I read into it and you actually get like a higher bonus payout in the casino. So if you're a big gambler, it might actually make sense because you got like a 10% bonus on all of your payouts. So it could be seen as an investment if you're a big time gambler. I'm sure that's just one of many examples of different types of utility for these NFTs in Decentraland. I mean, at $50,000, that is pretty expensive. So you would have to be gambling a lot of money to make that worth it. But maybe you just have a lot of money and you want to look cool in the metaverse with a really expensive cigar. Who knows?
I mean, that sounds pretty cool to me. I don't know if I'd pay that kind of money right now, though. Okay, so as far as partnerships go, this is going to be one of the key ones to keep our eyes on when comparing the two platforms. So the Sandbox has partnered with over 165 brands so far, including Adidas, Opera's, Binance, Snoop Dogg, AMC, Atari, as Ryan mentioned before, CryptoKitties. They're also supported by SoftBank, one of the biggest investment companies in the world, which did help them raise a $93 million funding round. On the other hand, Decentraland is backed by more than 20 investors, including Animoca Brands. They have partnerships with Samsung, Polygon, Atari, and even the South Korean government. Wonder what's going on there. You know, as far as partnerships go, I'm definitely going to have to give the lead to Sandbox. And I think overall, I would give the lead to Sandbox. Ryan, what do you think?
I would kind of relate this to like Bored Ape Yacht Club versus CryptoPunks, because Decentraland was the first and their world was out, and it's more community run than the Sandbox is. But like how Bored Ape Yacht Clubs is similar to the Sandbox, there's many more partnerships and the community is driving it to a degree, but they definitely have more institutional brands along for the ride. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think that is a critical factor in growth, having these big partnerships with the Sandbox. So I think I would say I do like the Sandbox a little bit more at this point, but I haven't played the game yet. So I want to play the game. I want to see how the metaverse looks, what I can do in it. I think it's really cool the flexibility that you do have in Decentraland. And that might win out over the long term. You know, being able to create absolutely anything you want on the land you own, I think that's a really cool concept.
Most certainly it is. And we got a comment in the chat from Michael asking, do people need gaming computers to experience the metaverse? Okay, so I tried this on my 2017 MacBook Pro. I tried Decentraland, sorry, to be specific. I tried Decentraland on my 2017 MacBook Pro. It was pretty laggy, but on my 2021 MacBook Pro with the M1 Pro chip, it runs like butter. So as far as like a full gaming tower with like a dedicated graphics card, you know, more or less at this point, this is a web-based game, so we'll see what happens. I have not dove into the Sandbox yet, so I can't comment on that, but I think it will become more accessible with time, and eventually we see the Sandbox is aiming for mobile, so if they're trying to deliver a good user experience, it's got to be able to run on mobile devices. Okay, so we will defer the rest of this conversation to the expert. We have Michael Gord with us backstage, so let's just get it started. Michael, I'd like to welcome you to Moon or Bust. How are you doing today?
I am doing very well, thanks. How are you doing?
Doing great. Really happy you could join us today. Really excited to glean your experience and expertise on the metaverse sector in general. We've just been talking with our audience about the Sandbox versus Decentraland, and even teaching some of the newer viewers out there about NFTs and their value to begin with. But we also have some more experienced viewers, so we're going to get into all of it. I'm super excited. So before we talk about the Metaverse Group, can you tell us about tokens.com and why you decided to acquire a stake in the Metaverse Group?
So tokens.com is a public company that is focused on using its balance sheet to generate staking yields through digital assets. So it is a way for public market investors to get exposure to the digital asset class in a medium that they are already participating in, the public markets, but in an area of the capital market, specifically staking of digital assets, that is quote-unquote complicated for an audience that doesn't want to custody or control their own digital assets. And the reason why we thought it would be a good fit to acquire Metaverse Group is because, firstly, I've known Andrew, the founder, for quite a while. And Metaverse Group is essentially a similar business model, except instead of staking of digital assets, it's earning yields through NFTs, which is an extension of the tokens business model. And I was pretty excited about the opportunity of creating the first public metaverse, first public solely from the beginning blockchain public metaverse company, very different from what Facebook is doing with the private metaverse, for example.
Awesome. So could you tell me a little bit about your history in the crypto, blockchain, NFT, metaverse space, and how you found yourself where you are today?
So I'm a serial entrepreneur and investor. I've been focused on digital assets for just about the past 10 years. I now have an ecosystem of companies that are focused across the blockchain capital market. So everything from introducing new digital assets on blockchain exchanges to traditional public market exchanges, trading, lending, fixed income, asset management, and the NFT and metaverse capital market are emerging trends that I thought too exciting to ignore. And specifically the metaverse, I really think is the next multi-trillion dollar market. So I thought it would be worthwhile for us to participate in a larger capacity than just by deploying capital.
Awesome. So what services do you currently offer to your clients? Yeah, I guess just take it from there.
Yeah. So Metaverse Group right now is a vertically integrated real estate company focused on the metaverse economy. So we buy land, we build experiences on the land, generate cash flows through renting out those experiences, generate cash flows through either the experiences themselves or through renting out the land for other individuals to create experiences. So everything similar to Brookfield in the traditional world, we buy land and monetize the land either through experiences or renting. Experience being either NFT art galleries, office space, fashion shows, concerts, conferences. I believe there's going to be dozens of new business models that are created through the metaverse. So yeah, right now we're vertically integrated, but the intention is to be vertically and horizontally integrated. So I think we're pretty uniquely positioned as holders of quite a bit of land to be able to build businesses on those land, on those pieces of land that are native to the metaverse.
That's really cool. And in your opinion, what are the best ways to monetize land in a platform like Decentraland or the Sandbox or any other metaverse that you guys have invested in?
So similar to the real world, I think it really depends on your model, on your ecosystem, on your audience. So office, commercial office space in the real world, good business. It will be in the metaverse as well. Gaming and gambling, of course, good business in the real world, will be good business in the metaverse. Fashion still is high demand for stores that sell fashion, wear clothes in the in the real world. NFT wearables, I think, is going to be big business, and we're betting pretty big on that. Education, so the future of e-learning is in the metaverse. The future of academics is in the metaverse. Art galleries. Really anything that you can think of in the traditional world, concerts, conferences, everything that you can monetize land with in the physical world, you'll be able to monetize land with in the digital world, except for food. I'm not sure exactly. actually, now that I think about it, McDonald's might as well, for example, have McDonald's in the metaverse, where if you show up to McDonald's and you answer some questions, then you are, you get an NFT that might, provide you with some free fries in the real world or something like that.
Maybe even get the food delivered.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Michael,
you could also get the food delivered through the metaverse. That would make sense.
So Michael, why do you see a need for office space, like commercial office space in the metaverse? Why couldn't you just use Zoom? What kind of benefits does real like metaversal office space provide?
So you could use Zoom, but the future of meetings and the future of the office is in the metaverse. Inevitably offices will move into the metaverse, and Bill Gates actually predicts that most business meetings will be held in the metaverse. But in addition to business meetings, if you have a bank, for example, then you could do KYC and you can actually set up bank accounts in the metaverse. If you have a accounting company, you could, get accounting clients. If you have a law firm, you could get law clients. If you have a hedge fund, you could raise capital through the metaverse. So really any physical business that has office space is just opening up a new audience to metaverse users.
Makes sense. And what kind of industries do you see entering the space of the metaverse right now?
I think the first one to really explode was music. So Decentraland did a metaverse festival a couple months ago that had participation from Deadmau5 and stuff and Paris Hilton. That got a lot of traction. I think the next one in Q1 is going to be fashion. So fashion brands, education, universities are starting to get exposure, and e-learning companies. Gambling companies, there's a few casinos, play-to-earn companies, and
Michael, we've also seen some countries set up embassies within the metaverse. Does this make sense to you? Where do you see this going?
Yeah, of course. I think why not have a, like, even during COVID, I actually lost my passport in Turkey, and to get to the Canadian embassy was not possible because of COVID. So in the metaverse, I would be able to show up to the Canadian embassy and I'd be able to get a new passport perhaps in the embassy.
Yeah, that would definitely save a lot of time, especially during COVID times where you physically and literally cannot even get there. So Michael, we had the Decentraland versus Sandbox debate earlier. I'm curious to hear from your perspective, which one are you more optimistic on, or both? And then also from your client's perspective, which one are they asking about requesting at this point?
Sorry, what was that question?
Yeah, so we had the Decentraland versus Sandbox debate a little bit ago on this episode. I'm curious to hear from your perspective. Do you take a side? What are the differences? And then also from your client's perspective, which one are they asking about?
So I think that Decentraland is super far ahead. Sandbox only released their alpha a week ago. So I'm pretty bullish on Sandbox as well, but they have just quite a lot of building to do. Somnium Space is good. Somnium Space is in virtual reality. Like, you need to have a headset, so that's not mainstream adoption. So I think Decentraland is the most bullish right now, and is getting the most adoption.
Very interesting. And are your clients requesting more help with Decentraland or Sandbox?
My clients are they're asking us for our feedback. I think the Decentraland is just the most marketable for big business at the moment.
Interesting. But we saw Adidas and Snoop Dogg go into the Sandbox. Do you think that was basically just the business end of it? Or was there a reason that they chose to build in the Sandbox?
So Decentraland, I think, is building the biggest social network of the future. I think Sandbox is building the biggest game engine of the future. So if you're looking to build a play-to-earn game, then Sandbox might be a better fit. If you're looking to create an office space, for example, then Decentraland might be a better fit. It's really, depending on your thesis.
Fascinating. That's actually really interesting. I've never heard that perspective before. Okay, so is it possible to, build an office space or, event in Decentraland and port it over to the Sandbox? Do you see this interoperability happening in the future, or is that kind of making it too easy to leave one platform?
Yeah, so we're just at the cutting edge of that. I think metaverses will be interoperable, same as websites, are interoperable through hyperlinks. So someone will be able to hyperlink from a metaverse experience in Decentraland to a metaverse experience in Sandbox. But there are only a few people that have builds in Decentraland and only a few people that have builds in Sandbox. And there's not a huge amount of overlap yet of people that have builds in both. Mm-hmm. And there's also not that many events that are happening in either yet. We're still at the cutting edge of interoperability of metaverses.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael, Logan and I have debated this before, but how important do you think location is in the metaverse? Because can't you just teleport around? You don't really have as many costs with travel as you do in the real world.
Yeah, same as the physical world. I mean, you could also just cab around the real world, but if you have real estate that's beside the Empire State Building or a high traffic area, then reasonably likely that your area beside the metaverse or beside the Empire State Building will be high value as well. Or if you in this case of Snoop Dogg, if you have land beside Snoop Dogg, then you could set up a cannabis shop, or you could set up a rap store or something. And it's reasonably likely that you'll get participation as a result of Snoop Dogg's participation or Snoop Dogg's traffic. I think that even though you can teleport around the metaverse, I think people will oftentimes just go around, you know, wander looking for cool things to see and explore. Mm-hmm. And then also, if you, for example, if your land is beside the road, then that's, people will see it more. So it's more likely to be higher value. I think if it's beside the road or if it's beside a district, then people will be teleporting to the district. So they'll see your land either in the district or adjacent to the district. And if your land is not beside a road, then it's possible to be fully surrounded by someone else that in theory could put brick walls surrounding your parcel with a sign saying, sell me your parcel, or we're going to keep brick walls up. So nobody can enter your land unless they teleport. So similar to the real world, location is quite important.
Yeah, Michael, I have to agree with you that location is very important in the metaverse as well. But the fundamental lack of physics, the ability to teleport, is obviously different than in the real world. What type of other paradigm shifts do you see that will maybe play out in the metaverse, have the potential to play out in the metaverse compared to things that we could never see in the real world? Like teleportation is one of them, but impossible fashion is another one. I'm curious if you could list any more.
Yeah, impossible fashion. We can have music festivals on the moon. We can have music festivals underwater. We can have music festivals on Mars. We can have conferences in the jungle. We can have, office space that is impossible.
Michael, I think you muted yourself.
Hey, Michael, we're not able to hear you right now.
No, I'm still not getting anything.
Hey, there we go. I think it's working now. Oh, I could hear him for a second there. Then he popped out. But yeah, thanks for hanging with us, guys. And I'm sure. Okay. Hey, yo, how's it going?
Hey, sorry, cut out.
Nope, sounds great. So you left off with having meetings and music events in places that aren't possible.
So you could have meetings on elephants, you could have meetings on a flying saucer, you could have flying mm-hmm. boats, you could have flying cars, you could have a stage on the moon, you could have a stage in space, a stage underwater, you could walk on water, you can you could have a car that goes on water. Really anything you think you can create. The question is, what can you think?
Mm-hmm. So obviously you've thought about this question a lot. Are there any specific, investment strategies or theses that you've came up with to get ahead of this paradigm shift?
I think that we're at 500,000 users of Decentraland. I think that, and it's up from 15,000 users at the beginning of the year. That's a times 30x in 1 year. If we do a times 30x from 500,000, then that becomes 15 million. And then another 30x becomes the size of Facebook. And as I think is commonly known, networks double. So networks don't grow at the same rates. Networks grow at an accelerating rate. Mm-hmm. But if we just assume that the network is going to grow at the same rates, 30x per year, then in 2 years, Decentraland becomes the size of Facebook by the number of users. So I think generally my thesis is just that right now we're at 0.0001% adoption. Mm-hmm. That adoption is going to go from 0.0001 to 100% of the world will be in the metaverse, 99.5% of the world will be in the metaverse, same as how everyone uses the internet. Mm-hmm. Actually, anyone that uses the internet will use the metaverse. Mm-hmm. The question is how often, how valuable will their, Yeah, my thesis is just that this is going to explode by thousands of percents, I think, or thousands of times in the next few years as it goes from 500,000 users to 100% of the world using the metaverse. So, you know, we just look to immerse ourselves into the technology, into the community. Mm-hmm. We just want to, you know, accelerate adoption.
So no play is a bad play, but potentially centralized plays could be, one of the worst picks. So could you talk about closed and private metaverses like Facebook's and how you compare them in value to open source Ethereum or public blockchain based metaverses?
Yeah. So Facebook, let's go back in time. The private internet was popular in the beginning of the internet revolution. All these information companies were trying to build private intranet. Mm-hmm. And the intranet is still a multi-billion dollar business, but it hasn't accrued multi-trillion dollars like the public internet has, because the entire world is more creative and more innovative than a single company can ever be. It doesn't matter how big or how innovative that company might be. Now, if we consider the blockchain universe, private blockchains in 2012, 2013, 2014, super hyped, raised hundreds of millions of dollars, delivered very little in terms of real world value. Private blockchains will be a $1 billion business. They already are a $1 billion business, but they have in no way accrued multi-trillion dollars of value per year like the public blockchain has, and I expect to continue to. So similar to the metaverse, the private metaverse will be a $1 billion business, but it is not going to accrue multi-trillion dollars of value like the public metaverse is, I think, already starting to occur.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, I'm interested to know what kind of competitive advantage some of these other metaverses you work with have. So if you could speak on maybe Upland and Somnium Space or whatever other metaverses you work with outside of Decentraland and the Sandbox, and speak on maybe why you chose to work with these.
So really most of our portfolios in Decentraland, Sandbox, and Somnium at the moment. Our thesis is that buying metaverse lands, buying metaverse real estate, is the same as buying pixels of a website's homepage in 1990 or 1995 before websites were popularized. The difference is that websites weren't able to sell pixels of their real estate. They had to sell advertising space, which was not fixed. Hmm. So our thesis is that we want to be, in addition to betting on metaverses that we can already monetize, like Decentraland and Sandbox primarily, we still want to be, have smaller bets in a tail end side of the ecosystem, like Uplands.
That makes sense. I have one last question for you, Michael. I would love some metaverse property swag in my life. Is there any way we could get merch to rep? I was in real estate. Now I'm looking at the metaverse. This is right up my alley.
Rock on. Definitely. We don't have any swag yet, but I'm happy to send some. And that's a good point. We should probably make some.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I appreciate it.
Michael, what's exciting you the most about this space right now? Is there any one specific niche that you've been obsessed with lately?
Fashion, I would say, is at the tipping point of bringing a bunch of multinational iconic brands into the metaverse. And I think once we have a bunch of musicians playing music festivals on a weekly and then daily basis, and we have a bunch of iconic fashion brands that are participating, then we've really reached the tipping point, and the world is going to be adopting this stuff.
Very interesting. So you see Adidas coming in now. Are there any other murmurs about who could be coming next?
I have no comment on that. But I would like to see Facebook participating in the public metaverse. That would be fun.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I think inevitably Facebook is going to realize that they need to participate in the public metaverse. They can also build their own metaverse. That's fine. But, you know, how long can you... They're Facebook smart.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll get it soon enough.
Yeah, we see them building on Ethereum already with their crypto wallet or their spinoff that's not actually theirs. But yeah, it seems like they are embracing the public blockchain sector. And Wed, do you think, like, do you have a timeline, anything in mind at what point Facebook is kind of forced into joining the public blockchain space or bridging to it?
I think that Facebook needs more scalability. Like, Facebook can't release a product on Ethereum today. It would not usable by their users, especially if they're a million people in, and Facebook's not bringing a million people in, they're bringing 100 million people in.
Do you see mainnet or layer 2 on Ethereum as the main home of metaverses or other blockchains, any in particular?
$1 million question there.
That's why I asked it.
Right now, the only metaverses that are usable is the ones on Ethereum. But it is definitely a big opportunity for metaverses to be launched on arbitrary blockchain protocols. I think actually Tron has some, Solana has some. I think that's it.
I heard Cardano doesn't have any metaverses on it just yet.
And has some bigger issues in terms of scalability than metaverses at the moment.
Indeed, it looks like that. All right, Michael, I really appreciate your time today and your insights. I thought this conversation was fascinating. I'm all out of questions. Ryan, do you have any last questions?
No, I think we covered it.
All right, Michael, before you head out, I just want to give you one last opportunity. If you want to make any shout outs, tell the people where to connect with you. Anything you want, the floor is yours.
Thanks. Can connect on me on Twitter at BitGord. You can find out more about the Metaverse Group at metaversegroup.io. And I should add that if you are watching, then I pride you for the good fortune of being in the cutting edge of the metaverse world. And I encourage you to not forget about it and, you know, mm-hmm. research and consider how you can contribute. It's, I would say, the opportunity, I think, actually even bigger than crypto, bigger than the internet. Bigger than cars, bigger than telecom, bigger than TVs.
Couldn't agree more. Michael, thank you so much. Hope to see you soon.
Cheers.
All righty, Ryan. I really enjoyed that interview. What did you think about it?
Yeah, it was cool stuff. Like I said, man, I was really interested in real estate going into college. I did some commercial real estate, and now I'm in blockchain and metaverse stuff. So this was really cool to see the intersection between real estate, the metaverse, cryptocurrency, and all that. And I think Michael had some really cool insights, so I'm glad we had him on.
Yeah, the one thing that I found the most interesting was his distinction between Decentraland and the sandbox. So we see a higher average price per land in the sandbox right now, and we see the bigger brands going into the sandbox right now. But Michael, who is the one of the top three, maybe number one expert in the world on this, thinks that Decentraland is the way to go, and it's going to be the home of socialization, whereas the sandbox will be more for, you know, brands and events. I think that's what he said, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I had never thought of that distinction before, but I think it's important to keep in mind, and it's maybe going to guide my metaverse investment thesis in the future. But let us know what you guys thought about the interview. Smash the like button if you think the metaverse is interesting. If you own any metaverse tokens, drop them in the chat. Yeah, maybe we have time for a little bit of Moon or Bust. Let's see what time is it. We have 90 seconds left on today's episode. What did you think about his prediction at the end? Let's just do a little bit more wrap up. At the end, he said this will be bigger than the internet, bigger than cars, bigger than crypto. Could it be bigger than the universe?
Probably not. But I mean, hey, I think it could be bigger than .com. I think it could even be bigger than cars. I mean, don't know if it could be bigger than the internet, because like we've said before, we're kind of already in an early stage of the metaverse, right? So like, I don't know, the internet's kind of part of the metaverse. It's integrated. Like, you need the internet to have the metaverse. So I don't know if I would go that far. And I'm not sure if I would go as far as to say it'll be bigger than blockchain, but I definitely think it will be huge. I think it could be just as big as blockchain. I think it could be bigger than .com, and I think it could be bigger than basically almost any other industry we've ever seen throughout the history of the world, really.
Okay, so I have one last thought that I want to leave the audience with, okay? So imagine 50, 100 years in the future when we have neural implants that can connect and deliver, electrochemicals to our brains. So these metaverse experiences are indistinguishable from our real world experiences. At that point, what's to say that our real world experiences aren't just a metaverse already? Good luck sleeping tonight, guys. Simulation is real.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.